As this year comes to a close, how many of you thought it would end the way it did? How many of you saw it coming? How about when your children were born? How many of you predicted what would happen when they grew up? And those of you got married the first time, how many of you saw that coming? That's the trouble with life. We never see it coming. We never know what's around the corner, and we always think we can handle it, and then we don't. But this morning, that's also the trouble with faith. Things don't happen the way we wanted them to. And I think a lot of us make mistakes when it comes to faith. We pray for God to turn back the clock. Or we pray for God to put the pieces back together. Or we even pray for God to do the impossible. And those prayers are fine, and I think those prayers are justified, and those prayers are okay. But as long as you understand this morning that your faith cannot be determined by whether or not God can put it back together. Our faith cannot be determined by whether or not God can make things change. Our faith is not measured by whether or not God can bring back your past. Our faith is only determined by whether or not you choose to engage in the present. And this morning, I spoke to you last week about Judas, and kind of planned on moving forward, but there's a lot about this story that we didn't do, and I was pretty hard on Judas last week, understandably. But the more I looked at the story of Judas the last 2 weeks, the more I saw that there's a lot of me in him. And there's a lot of disappointment that I see in my life that I think he felt in his, and I could not go on without telling you more about it. I spoke with a young man this week on Tuesday, and the conversation merely started, "Are you going home for Christmas?" That's all I asked. An hour later, I still don't know if he's going home for Christmas. So, you know, I'm sure y'all have had that story. You know, you meet with someone, you talk to them, and you leave, and you think, do I have "Tell Me Your Life Story" tattooed on my forehead? You know, it's kind of one of those. I just met the guy. He's 22 years old. I said, "Are you going home for Christmas?" And he starts talking about his mother. Starts talking about all the memories he has of his mother. He loves his mother. His mother's a beautiful woman. And talked about his childhood and the childhood Christmases. He's an only child, and it was him and his dad and his mom, and he would get up, and they would have Christmas together. And this went on year after year after year, and he said, you know, he was starting to tell me all about these great Christmases. And as he's talking, I'm thinking, you know, you're not going to make Christmas this year at this rate. You know, man. But then the conversation starts to change, starts to get a little dark. And then I start to realize why he's taking so long. He's prepping me, you know, for the conclusion of the story. He starts to talk about what his mother did to his father. And then he talks about their divorce. And then he starts talking about how his dad found someone else. He talked about his mother's unwillingness to own up to what she did to his father. He talked about his dad's unwillingness to forgive his mother. And this 22-year-old was so angry with his parents. And I finally had enough. I said, "So, are you going home for Christmas?" And he said, "I'm not going home until they learn to work things out." I said, "When did they get divorced?" He said, "4 years ago. I said, I need to ask you a question. You know, I need to know this just before we go on. You know that your parents are never, ever going to get back together, right?" And the 22-year-old cried. He just cried. He said, "You know, I've prayed that they patch things up, but God hasn't answered my prayer." And I said, "Some things are not up to God." And he said, "Well, how do you know when they are and when they aren't?" I said, "Good question. You know, I'm just a Bible guy. That's more of a God question." And I began to think about myself and Judas. And I began to think about all of the things that we think are up to God, but really we fail to think about the things that are up to us. And this morning I want to talk to you about this. A lot of us pray that God can put our past back together. I got to tell you, God's not going to put your kid in reverse and make him revert back to the five-year-old you knew. Those mistakes they made, and they're not going to unmake them. And I know, I don't think preachers preach this sermon, but just letting you know, that prayer that, that they become unaddicted to whatever they're addicted to, they're going to be an addict for the rest of their life. And we can't turn it back. And for some of you, I know your parents didn't do what you wanted them to do. And I got news for you. There is no child who thinks that their parents did everything they wanted them to do. Your parents will disappoint you. Your parents are not as perfect as you thought they were. And you can't turn back to perfection because they never were perfect. You just thought they were. But those of you who lost this year, they're not coming back. And these are hard, hard things to accept. And I'm not saying you can't pray for things. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. What I am saying is that your faith can't be tied to whether or not God can turn back the clock. Now, I prayed for this, but God didn't do it, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to. Well, then you don't have no faith. Your faith is tied to you. And whether or not we, at the end of this year, with all this disappointment and all of these things that we thought was going to happen, it didn't happen, can you embrace the present? Or will you shirk into the dark, as this painting shows? I'm going to talk about this painting in just a second. It's my favorite. I collect paintings of, like, Bible characters, and most of them are old. This was from 1891. The painter is Nicolai Jay. I want to talk about this painting, but I really want to talk about Judas. I don't think Judas intended for his life to go this way. If you know the name of Judas, it would be like me telling you that there's somebody in your life and his name is Lincoln. Now, who do you think he was named after? Or what if his name was Abraham? Or, you know, I don't know. No lie. I met somebody in the restaurant and there's a child name. I said, what's his name? 2-year-old little kid. I said, what's his name? They said, Barack Obama. I said, you serious? So I speak before thinking. I went, are you serious? He said, are you Republican? I said, oh, no, I didn't mean it like that. I didn't mean it was a bad name. You know, I was just in shock. I never heard that. But there's a reason he got named, you know. I guess they're Democrats. You know, I mean, I'm just guessing at this point. I'm serious. I'm guessing at this point. They like the guy. You know, it's not like, well, we found it in a baby book. No. You did that on purpose. It wasn't a coin flip. You did it on purpose. And some of us are named after, you know, certain people. We've got friends from high school. He named his kid Michael Jordan. I thought, oh, that's a lot to live up to, but okay, you know. But you know, we get named after, I got named after Adam on Bonanza. I don't have much to live up to. Adam Cartwright, you know, it's a TV character. Not a lot of meaning in my name, you know. And people think that I'm named after, you know, oh, your dad was a preacher, the first one in the Bible. And I think, yeah, yep, you're right. That was him. Yeah, at least I get more cred that way. Judas, this guy who's named Judas, you're not named Judas from a baby book. When you're named Judas, you are named Judas because there was a man of Judas Maccabeus. Judas Maccabeus is a hero in Jewish literature. He's a hero in Jewish history. There's a little more than a century before, this man, who's on some of our coins, led the revolt. He gave Israel their independence back. He was a great leader. He was a fighter. When you're named Judas, you're expected to follow in those footsteps. Judas is looking for Israel to be what it once was. He's named, be like, you know, you're named Abraham Lincoln. That's a high ceiling for you to live up, you know, to live up to. That's a high threshold. He's named Judas. He's supposed to be a fighter. And to top it off, who handles the money with the apostles? You don't let the idiot handle the money. I'm serious. You know, which one of you can't count to 10? You here, handle the money. You know, that's not how that happens. That we don't do that. If Judas handles the money, it's because Judas has money. It's because he has money. That's why you let people handle the money. You find the person. If we, you know, we want an accountant here in church, we don't go looking, you know, who's declared bankruptcy? You? Okay, we think you ought to handle the books. No. No. Even my credit got checked before I came here. You know, I'm serious. Don't think that Judas, and you think, well, Judas was a thief. Rich people steal too. No, I'm just we know some rich people that didn't get that money the honest way. Come on now. Judas is a successful person. Judas has a good, strong name. He has a good background. And I think when he signs up to follow Jesus, I think he has some big, big dreams. This is the guy. And I think when Jesus says, follow me, and we say yes, it's because we're going to the promised land. And I don't think Judas set out to follow Jesus in the back of his mind thinking, I'm going to kill this guy. No. Just like you didn't think what would happen to you happened to you. It didn't happen that way. You know, Adam Medley got up here at the very beginning and was so grateful. But I talked to Adam 2 weeks before Kaya was born, and we never had a conversation that we had a week after she was born. Why? Because we didn't know. We weren't prepared for that. It just happened. And there's a lot of you who the conversations changed from 1 week to the next. I don't know when it happened for Judas. And I mentioned some of this last week, but there are, I think, some specific spots that Judas starts to see that, you know what, this isn't going to happen the way I thought it was going to happen. It's not going to happen. And I think one of them starts when Jesus overturns the temple. This man's provocative. You know, he starts making the wrong people mad. You ever have somebody just talk without thinking? Besides me? You know what I mean? In your life? And you don't want to take them anywhere? And we say, that's why we don't take you anywhere. That's why we can't have nice stuff. You know, y'all ever take your kid in the antique shop, and what do you tell your kids? Yeah. And I've seen parents, you know, mommy doesn't want you. And I'm thinking, oh, they. And when I told my kid, boy, you better not touch us. You know, and we walk in there, and you're looking at them the whole time. You know, if your kids got trained right, they walk in. You know, if they got trained, and some of your kids didn't do that because you didn't, that's your fault. I'm sorry, that was your fault. No, you didn't have to hit them. You didn't have to whip them. You didn't have to do that. Just look at them. And I went into some stores with my kids. I don't mean like yesterday. I mean, my kids are teenagers now. I mean like when they were like two, three. There's glass in here. You break it, you buy it. And parents try to, you know, keep, we need two parents so one can stay in the car. Got time for that. Took my kids in there. Line it up. Sit down. And we would go in, and the store owners felt sorry for the kids. Oh, you want some candy? Then they look at me like calling child services. Hey, I didn't do that. I just looked at them. That's all I did. I just looked at them. You know, but it made people uncomfortable. It made them uncomfortable. It's kind of mean. We don't like mean people. We don't like people yelling in public. We don't like people causing a scene. You ever been in a restaurant and somebody starts raising their voice? Oh, check, please. I can get out of here. You behind somebody, what do? We leave. This ain't changed in 2,000-3,000 years. We've never liked this. We don't like people making a scene. Jesus is provocative. He starts making a scene. And I got to tell you, when you start making the wrong people mad, you're not going to accomplish your agenda. Judas has been following this guy for 3 years, and all of a sudden, you got key people in the House and the Senate, and you're making them both mad. We can't get nothing passed like this. Can't have a bipartisan bill. I think Judas starts to see this is going south. And then, to top it off, Jesus starts confusing them. You remember that line in John when he says, those who eat my flesh and drink my blood? What is this, Dracula? Like, and even Jesus says, this is hard stuff for people to hear. And he says it that way for a reason. He's trying to speak in a way to make you upset. Those who eat my flesh and drink my blood. Why didn't he soften that a little bit? Well, I said blood. I didn't really mean like drink my blood. I meant like, you know, be. No, no, Jesus wants to be provocative. He wants you to think about what he says. But to Judas, I think this is a little over the edge. And last, I think he just makes the disciples uncomfortable. You know, the disciples come back, and in John 4, he's at the well with that woman. How many times has that woman been married? Yeah, I'm out of fingers. They know she has married multiple times, and they come back, and Jesus is alone with the woman at the well. Woo. And you think, well, that wouldn't. Let me just pause here, okay? Y'all know I love my wife. Everybody here knows that. If you don't know that I worship the ground she walks on, you don't know me. There's pictures of my wife hanging everywhere in our home, in my office. You know, people go, is in love with her. I am, very much so. But if any of y'all walked in and I'm in my office or somewhere alone with another woman who's known to be with a few men, y'all not going to raise your eyebrow just a little bit? Does that seem inappropriate to anybody in here? Some of you are like, okay. See me after church. Oh. And John 4 says they were a little upset. What are you doing? You're about to ruin this before we even get started. It's like saying, I'm going to run for the president of the United States, and then turn the corner, and he's in a closed office with this woman who's been married 5 or 6 times. Well, there went that candidacy. There's another one. They're upset about it. Jesus makes us a little uncomfortable. And then to top it off, he starts healing people on the day you're not supposed to heal people. Of all the days you could heal people, you pick this day. I'm serious. Of all the days, you got to do it on a Sabbath day. You can't do it on a Friday. You can't do it on a Friday. You can't do it. He's going to be just as lame on Saturday as he was. You couldn't have done it day before. You couldn't wait 6 hours. I'm serious. I mean, all it is 6 hours. He's been lame for 40 years. What's 6 more hours? Read the text. They're upset about it. We're trying to do something big, and then you go and do this. And then this is the worst. This one right here is the worst. They bring the woman who got caught with the man. They bring him before Jesus, and Jesus says, anyone without sin, let him cast the first stone. Right? Who is the only one qualified to throw a stone? Jesus. And he doesn't do it. You had an opportunity to show everybody you're a law follower. You had the opportunity. She deserved it. They caught her. You have the evidence. Do away with her. And Jesus says, you're forgiven. What? What kind of guy is this? I watch a lot of boxing. I watch a lot of old boxing. Mostly Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali. And I found it strange a couple of weeks ago. I was watching, because I don't have anything else to do, obviously. This was the second fight between Muhammad Ali and Jerry Quarry. And it was a huge fight. And Ali is fighting Quarry, and Ali has him, which is most of the time Ali has about anybody. He's got him dead to rights. Corey's bleeding. Corey's bleeding all the time anyway. But he's bleeding really bad in this fight. And you can tell Ali knows he's going to win. And Ali goes up to pretty much knock him out. And he looks to the ref and he says, stop the fight. Ali looks to the ref and says, stop the fight. And the ref just kind of stares at him. So Ali hits Corey. Makes him bleed some more. Ali turns to the ref and says, stop the fight. And then they stop the fight. He does it again with Ron Lyle a year later. And I remember watching it and I thought, what are you doing? You're Muhammad Ali. Knock him out. Knock him out. You're Muhammad Ali. And why would you do that? Because he was trying to show mercy. We used to coach, when Jaheim was little, like 9, we used to coach a football team. He was on it. One of his cousins had the ball. They threw him the ball. This kid was fast. I mean, he was super fast. And he was big. And he was one of the most athletic kids I knew. His name was Javante. It was his cousin. They threw Javante the ball. Javante got in open space. And it was, you know, it's like watching slow, you know, it was like watching slow motion. It's like watching a thing of beauty. And this other kid went to get him, and Javante just jumped out of the way. Kid fell on the ground. Javante stopped and said, you okay? Wasn't the brightest crayon in the box. Athletic. And me and the other coach said, what are you doing? And then he got tagged. You know, so he never lived that down. And I said, why'd you do that? And he said, I thought he got hurt. I said, come back later, man. Score and come back. 6 seconds ain't gonna matter. So I know earlier when I said you can't heal somebody 6 hours later, it's the same thing. It's the exact same thing. We lost that game by a touchdown. Who do you think I blame for that? Not me. The coaching was good. No, I'm not. No. This is a team sport. No. The coach is fine. That kid is horrible. Okay? You know, all of a sudden, it didn't turn out how I thought. How many times has this happened with our life? And with Judas, I think it happened. Because in the end, who threw in the towel? Jesus. Jesus starts to talk about, they're going to kill me. And Judas starts to realize that this was a colossal waste. What a colossal waste of time. This painting is entitled Conscience Judas. And Nicolai Jay wanted to show Judas staring off at the distance into the fading light as they take Jesus away. And Nicolai wanted to show this man who was folding his garments into himself and trying to shirk into the dark, because he didn't want to embrace the present. And we know what happens in Matthew 27. He runs. He doesn't want to embrace what he did. He doesn't want to embrace the darkness. He just kind of fades. How many of you have experienced that this year? Marriage didn't turn out how you thought. Kids didn't turn out how you thought. The job didn't turn out how you thought. The church didn't do what you thought. And how many of us, instead of embracing the present, we tried to get back what we once had? Or we tried to imagine that it could be something that it was never going to be, as long as we didn't have to embrace the present. Church, I will tell you, if you do not embrace the present, your faith has stalled. You have got to embrace it. And I think this story is not complete without another part, which is the part that Brooks read. And I mentioned it last week, but we really didn't touch it. Judas's story has to be told in conjunction with the story of the woman in Matthew 26. Gospel of John says this is Mary. In Matthew 26, verse 10, this is what Brooks read. So if you've got your Bibles, Matthew 26, verse 10. This woman, who I'm positive had other plans and it's not going to turn out. She comes in, she wastes this perfume on him, and the disciples are upset about it. Judas is upset about it. And in verse 10, aware of this, Matthew 26, 10, Jesus said to them, why are you bothering this woman? She's done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you always have with you, but you will not always have me. In other words, embrace the present. You're not always going to have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, Jesus says she did it to prepare me for burial. For years, I have thought that Jesus was saying, symbolically, this was to prepare me for burial. I don't think that anymore. I think in this woman's mind, she knew he's going to die. And I'm going to prepare him for his burial, which means this. Only Judas and Mary understand what's about to happen. The other disciples are bumbling numbskulls. I mean, read the text. Read what they say while they're going to trial. Read what they say when they come into Jerusalem. It says the disciples had no idea what was going on. Judas does. Mary does. Judas knows Jesus is about to die, and what does he do? He turns into himself. Mary knows Jesus is about to die, and she does the impossible. Instead of responding to an awful situation with arrogance and pride, like Peter does, instead of responding to an awful situation with jealousy and envy, like the Pharisees do, instead of responding to an awful situation with anger and desperation like Judas does, Mary responds with love and compassion like Jesus will. And church, that's how your faith will be measured. When the chips are down and when nothing happened how you thought, when everything has failed, will you think of yourself or will you think of others? There's a woman named Victoria. She was 46 at the time, and she was caring for her husband, Brent, who was 34. Brent was diagnosed with leukemia. And for the next 6 months, we watched his health descend to a point to where he was virtually immovable. And I happened to be at the hospital on the last day of Brent's life. And Vicky came out and she said, "I think he's going to die today." I said, "How do you know that?" She said, "I see it in his eyes." So I've been trying to tell him to fight, but I think he's ready to quit. I said, "What are you going to do?" She said, "I think I'm going to tell him it's okay." So Vicky went back in there, and she looked at Brent. She said two words. She said, "It's time." Vicky told the nurses their services are no longer needed. She gave her husband a bath. She put him in new clothes. They ate ice cream. They watched Good Times. That's a TV show, in case some of you didn't know what that was. They ate more ice cream. They called their parents. Vicky sang to him. And Brent died. It was the single most heroic moment I've ever seen. Vicky said, "You know, this is not what I signed up for. It's not what I asked God for." But then she had something else that was really neat. She said, "On the other hand, I did ask God for a mate. I did ask God for a good husband. I did ask God for someone to love and to love me back. And it's exactly what I got." When Vicky faced the darkness and it didn't turn out how she thought, when her dreams are dashed, when her expectations are unrealized, Vicky didn't pull her coat to herself and retreat into the dark like Judas did. Vicky chose to think of Brent and to give herself fully to him. This morning I want us to think about this painting. Because when I showed this painting to that young man I told you about when he was 22... he said, "What are you preaching on?" And I said, "I'm preaching on this." And I showed it to him. I said, "Do you know who that is?" And he said, "Oh, that's Jesus." He said, "And the mob's coming for him." That's interesting. When we look at the painting one way, it looks like a man who's folding into himself and watching the light fade. When we look at it another way, the painting is of a man who knows the darkness that's encroaching. And he opens his hands, and he embraces the present. We sing a song. It's an old song. I had to ask Dale Hyder about it. I couldn't find it. It's called "What Will You Do With Jesus?" There's like two versions of this. I think there's like a Church of Christ version and then the other version. You can't find it online. You can't find the lyrics. And if those of you find the lyrics, you know, you don't have to send them to me. It's okay. I got the book now. It's all right. I got it. But it's a song, "What Will You Do With Jesus?" And it's a conversion song. It's one of them invitation songs. "What will you do with Jesus? The question comes to you." So we're wanting you to come be baptized. You know? So it's a good song. And it's a great song for that. And you ought to think about that. What will you do when the moment comes? But I think it's a song that we should continue to sing even long after we're baptized. When we face our own dark, what will you do with Jesus? What will you do when the question comes to you? What will you do when the opportunity presents itself? This morning, how are you going to respond when your child is not going to do what you thought they would? This morning, how are you going to respond when you realize your spouse will not love you back? This morning, how are you going to respond when the best friend you want to fight chooses to die? You're going to shirk, close in, go into the dark, or will you think of others? What did Jesus do for you. When you did not turn out how he thought, you did not do what he thought you would do, you did not do what he wanted you to do, he did not shirk into the dark. He died for you with love and compassion. This morning, that's the call. That's the invitation. As the year comes to a close, as our situations get dark, as anything, your faith will be determined by whether or not you take a step back or you do as Jesus did and embrace the present. If you need help with this, won't you come while together we stand and sing.